Hello and welcome to episode 19 of series 5 of the Engaging Internal Comms podcast. This is the show for employee engagers and internal communicators who like to keep up to date with all that is new in our profession. My name's Craig Smith from The Big Picture People. Welcome again to the Engaging Internal Comms podcast. If you're a new listener, you will find over 100 episodes available at our website, which is thebigpicturepeople.co.uk. If you go to the website and you click on the podcast tab, you will see all of the podcast episodes going back all the way to 2020, which you can listen to, consume there. And that's where you'll get the best listening experience, regardless of which platform you're listening on now. On the website, we have links on our show notes. We have a full show note for each episode. And we also have links to our guests and any media that they reference in their interviews itself. Also on the website, you'll find links to our products and our services, our visual communication tools, our explainer videos, and our other internal communications products. So that's the best place to visit if you are new to the show or if you want to get the full podcast experience. Anyway, let's move into the topic for this episode's interview. Surprisingly, in the 4 years we've been publishing the Engaging Internal Comms podcast, a topic that we've not covered before is video. And video is obviously a massively popular and durable platform for communication, for internal communications. So we wanted to have a dive into that, and we wanted to speak to someone who's spent many years working in internal communications video production and find out what are some of the tips and techniques that they use to make really compelling and engaging internal communication videos. So we're going to be looking at all sorts of ideas around whether we should use scripts when we are making our corporate videos, what's the best way to host our corporate videos, and should we have comments on enabled on our corporate videos? Do we use videos as an asynchronous tool where people just watch them and consume them how they wish? Or should we go back to maybe using them in the way that we used many years ago, where we would watch videos together collectively? And obviously that's more challenging given the way that people are working now, working remotely and not necessarily all in one location. So we're going to be taking a deep dive into everything to do with corporate videos from an internal communications perspective and how you can get the best out of this channel. So I hope you find this a useful interview. My guest today is Pat Taggart. Pat started creating corporate videos in Philadelphia. As a 22-year-old kid with limited equipment and a whole lot to learn, he'd walk into an organization and meet plenty of smart, charismatic people. He'd then put them in front of a camera and everything changed. Those smart, charismatic people looked terrified, sweating and stumbling over a stiff, heartless script that they had worked endless hours leading up to production day. Pat didn't know much, but one thing he was certain, that things needed to be done in a better way. Fast forward today, and Pat is a documentary filmmaker who helps companies and individuals win hearts and business through sharing their story with video. So hello, Pat. How are you?
Hello, Craig. Thank you for having me. And I just had flashbacks to the early days when you read that intro. Oh, boy.
I'm not going to ask you how long ago that 22-year-old kid was operating, because I don't want to kind of age you. But I'm guessing it was a few years ago, yeah?
You know, I used to say half a lifetime ago, and I just turned 45, so now it's more than half a lifetime ago.
Oh, gosh, that's always scary. That's always a scary tipping point, isn't it? Yes, absolutely. tell us a little bit more about where you're based, Pat.
Yeah, just outside of Philadelphia. So we're on the East Coast, about 2 hours south of New York. But, you know, my work allows me to travel quite a bit. And, you know, the first two times I was in Europe was for video. So I'm so grateful that I kind of went down this path.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Well, anyway, we've just been talking a little bit about your backstory there. Tell us a little bit more about how that sort of 22 year old kid who kind of saw all these kind of terrified looking people sat in front of the camera becoming inarticulate. Tell us a little bit more about what are some of the things you learned from that and how it's kind of led you to what you're doing now. And maybe also just tell us a little bit about some of the clients and projects you're working on at the moment, obviously acknowledging confidentiality where you need to.
Of course. Well, Craig, something had to change, because I would come home with this footage that was not good, and these people looked terrified. And I just spent time with them, getting to know them, and they're incredibly engaging and smart, and they knew their business inside and out, but we would press record and things would just completely fall apart. And so here I am, 22 years old, no prospects, realizing either I have to figure this out or I am going to be jobless. And so I said, okay, where's the sticking point here? Where are things going sideways? And really, it was the scripts. Because corporate video, by definition, you get together in a room and you write these terrible scripts, and then you have people reading off teleprompters or cue cards, and you see their eyes dashing back and forth and they look scared to death. And I said, well, what if we just get rid of the scripts? And unfortunately, I didn't have a mentor. Somebody probably would have told me that, like, hey, kid, stop using the scripts. But I didn't have anybody. I didn't know anybody that was in the industry. And so I said, okay, well, you know, I'm talking to you guys about this beforehand. Can't we just continue to talk about this, but just kind of press record?
Yeah.
And that's what we did. You know, it just became a conversation. And so we got rid of the scripts. And then the second thing, Craig, we did was we stopped making people stare into the lens of a camera and just had them look slightly off camera at me.
Yeah.
And just have a conversation. And then these people just lit up. You know, it was so much more relaxed and people talked with a normal cadence and not with their video voice. And the truth is that it's not the company's responsibility to figure out the perfect messaging.
Yeah.
The story's already there. That's the secret to all of this. The story exists in every business of any size in any industry on the planet. And so the job of a production company, the job of a documentary filmmaker, is to ask questions, to engage people in a conversation, to make them comfortable, and then to take all that clay back and form it into a cohesive, compelling story.
Yeah.
And that's how I spend my time now.
Fantastic. Fantastic. I guess like a video version of the, of what we're doing here, but just via audio, which, you know, we spoke just before we pressed record, and it's very much a kind of conversational approach, which, you know, I like to do as well. I've had people who've, you know, when I've interviewed them in the past, and didn't make the show, unfortunately, because we've kind of, you know, it's become apparent they're reading from a kind of scripted set of answers, which just sounds so stilted and
so
unnatural.
Bad.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. It's so bad.
Yeah.
I mean, the
yeah.
point is we make these videos. So there's two reasons why I work with clients typically. Number one is to attract customers.
Yeah.
And number two is to help them recruit.
Yeah.
So to attract new employees.
Yeah.
People, I mean, if you think that people are going to be manipulated by your script, then you are obviously trying to attract, you're saying that your customers are dumb or that the people you're trying to hire, and they're not. I mean, they can see through that instantly. And so, you know, stop trying to pull one over on people and just be genuine, just be yourself. People are so worried on video about stumbling here and there.
Yeah.
That's how you sound when you have a normal conversation. I've already stumbled several times.
Yeah. Yeah.
That just lets you know that I'm unscripted. And that's what people want. They don't want perfection. They want authenticity.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. And so you mentioned there a lot of the videos you do for kind of like external marketing, either whether that's employer marketing or employee, you know, branding or company branding. Do you do internal communications work as well?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
So I was really fortunate to spend 6.5 years as the global head of video for a company called Stericycle.
Yeah.
And so Stericycle is kind of what's the number they put on it, Craig? The 3,000-pound, one-ton gorilla. They always put this weight on this gorilla, whatever it means. It's just this term to mean that you're the biggest player in your market.
Yeah.
And so that was Stericycle, and they are in the medical and hazardous waste business.
Right.
So lesson number one there. If you think that your industry precludes you from using video and telling stories, it does not. Because if you can tell stories within a medical waste industry business, you can tell stories anywhere.
Yeah.
But I went in there and, you know, they had always done things kind of in a very, I don't want to say old school, but a very traditional manner when it came to internal communications. And some things didn't even necessarily have a great impact, but they did them because that's the way you always do them. So for example, we got there and they had always produced a newsletter. It was a very well done newsletter. It just didn't have tremendous engagement, but it took a lot of hard work from a lot of really smart people. And so we said, hey, you know, is there an opportunity to rethink this? Could a newsletter become a news show? And then of course the first reaction was, sounds expensive. I said, well, it doesn't have to be. People are filtering this news to us. What if we just kind of took that, we cast a couple team members to be our anchors, we put them in a conference room, And we just had them do the news as if they were sitting at a news desk on one of the networks.
Mm-hmm.
And then we can have people from these locations, because it was a multinational company. So, you know, the trap is that you feel like the whole company is just whatever your daily task is, and you don't really have a feel for how big it is.
Mm-hmm.
Well, all of a sudden, people that would have never submitted content for the newsletter started sending in videos from their location.
Mm-hmm.
And so they were competing for a spot on this news program.
Mm-hmm.
Well, engagement went up, I think it was 400% over the newsletter, as far as the open and watch through rate of our videos compared to the click through rate on the newspaper. We didn't change the news. It was still the same news. It was just delivered in a medium that people wanted to consume.
Nice. No, I really like that. It reminds me, actually, it takes me back many years now when I worked in a food company, and I worked in a kind of health and safety team. And one of the things we did there, and this is a kind of, that shows you how long ago it was, we bought a kind of video camera, like a, you know, with not a digital one. It was a kind of, you know, an old VHS type thing.
Yeah.
And we bought this camera and we had little kind of safety teams, and we lent them the camera, but they had to go and make a kind of safety video that they would then kind of show to their, you know, we would show it to their colleagues, and we kind of gave them some basic editing stuff as well. So yeah. And I mean, it's not nowhere near as sophisticated as what you're doing, but it was kind of crowdsourced content, which was much more compelling. And, you know, we encouraged them to have a bit of fun, you know, not to obviously do anything dangerous, but to kind of make messages that they could sort of present to their colleagues. So there was all, you know, it got them to think about the content and actually creating the content, but it also then got them, you know, their colleagues to kind of relish watching them. Whereas, you know, if we stuck them in front of one of these kind of theatrically produced sort of safety videos back in the day with, you know, people with big hairstyles and padded shoulders, you know, people would just sort of cringe. So yeah, I mean, it sort of just reminds me of that kind of whole engagement piece around when you see familiar faces and you kind of relate to the content, and it's not something that's been kind of, you know, overly produced and kind of had all the kind of energy sapped out of it.
You're right. And you mentioned safety. What a wonderful use for video content from an internal standpoint.
Mm.
You know, also at Stericycle, the safety record wasn't great.
Mm.
What they realized was that they didn't have an issue with people understanding, for example, how to pick up a box correctly.
Yeah.
They had a safety engagement problem.
Yeah.
It wasn't top of mind. And so we set out to attack the problem with video, and we didn't attack it from a traditional standpoint where we were going to do step one, bend at the knees.
Yeah.
Step two, we actually created comedic videos that made it top of mind about how to go about your job. So we were pulling clips from Family Guy, for example, where Peter Griffin's like, all right, here's the deal. You know, you take your knees totally out of the equation, you put it all on your back, and he tries to lift something and he collapses. And, you know, you hear the guy say, all right, that's obviously not the right way. So we kind of spoke to them in a way that they were like, okay, this is kind of cool. This is different. I understand this. And so when they went to pick up a box, they weren't thinking about steps. They were thinking, oh yeah, I watched that video. Definitely don't do it like Peter Griffin.
Yeah.
Right. And so it was top of mind. And that's the goal. I mean, we insult people sometimes internally and assume that they don't know how to do things. Of course they know how to do things. They're smart people. Like, they've had safety training. Sometimes you just have to remind them, hey guys, this is important. Right.
Yeah.
The other side of that, because it's not always comedic, is sometimes it's important to tell more emotional stories about what can happen and the impact it can have on lives.
Yeah.
Stories stick in a way that, you know, traditional messaging never will. If you tell stories, if you share stories, they are typically going to stick with people. And so I really think it's important for organizations to take inventory of their stories, you know, both the light and the heavy, and figure out, okay, is there a way we can share this to better things and make things safer and more productive for our people?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, sticky was the word I was going to use as well. Absolutely. Yeah. Anyway, let's move on maybe to look at video more as a kind of a category of you know, a channel or a medium that internal communications people can use. I'm just interested, you know, as a professional working in that kind of internal and external comms use of video, what's the current landscape in the industry? Obviously, we've seen over the, you know, since the advent of the smartphone and you know, I was going back in the day to the old VHS recorders. Then we had the kind of advent of digital cameras and then hard drive cameras. And then now pretty much, you know, phones for the videos we kind of make ourselves for holiday videos, that sort of thing. What's the kind of current landscape in terms of the technology that people are using, the platforms, the way that people are viewing internal videos at the moment from your perspective, from what you see, you know, given your external perspective, but also going back to your Stericycle days?
One thing we did at Stericycle that was very kind of counter to how large public companies operate. People think that everybody's out to steal your material, and that everybody's going to say negative things and something terrible is going to happen.
Yeah.
We decided we are going to leave comments on for all of our people.
Okay.
So we put all of our videos on Vimeo, which is just a more professional version of YouTube to people that don't know. And we would send out links to the company, I don't know, thousands of people. I forget how many people we had. And we would allow them to comment. Now, pessimists or people that are scared of their own shadow would say, oh no, there's going to be people in here, swearing and saying awful things about the company. That happened twice in the 6 years that I was there. Nobody swore. Only twice did people cross the line with things. And you just have somebody that's responsible to monitor the comments, right? And if there's something that you feel is negative, you know, is offensive, you remove that. You certainly don't remove something that's constructive criticism, because, you know, we would have 100 comments on a video, 97 of them or 98 of them would be positive, and a couple of them would be maybe some constructive criticism, like, hey, good video, but I noticed in the background there was an issue with something involving safety, right? You don't remove that, because number one, you have to show people that they have a voice, and number two, and they're not being censored. And number two, it just lends credence to all of the positive comments that you're getting. If all people ever see is positivity, then they're going to think, okay, obviously you're screening these, right? Yeah. But if you allow some things to come through that are just kind of honest and constructive, then people say, okay, this really is a spot where I have a voice. And that's a really wonderful thing. So, you know, as far as the landscape goes, things have even changed since then. I haven't been at Stericycle in, I think it's 6 years. And I mean, video has exploded even since then. The real beauty is that there's no longer an expectation of 100% professional quality when you put things out, because people in their daily life on social media are so used to consuming homegrown video. Cell phone video. So, and these cell phones, Craig, honestly, the cell phone in most people's pocket is better and more capable than a video camera that I bought about 10 years ago. $7,000. That's no longer an excuse not to create content, even for the smallest of organizations that say, oh, we just don't have a budget. You should be creating content. You should be putting it on a platform that makes it very, very easy, number one, to share it, and number two, to archive it. So Vimeo is wonderful for that, because it becomes your library. And let people weigh in, give them a voice, let them be participants in the content that you're creating.
Nice. Yeah, I like that. I mean, I guess you know, again, you're an objective guy, and you can kind of, I guess you've through what you've said already, you've seen good use of video, but you've maybe seen inappropriate use of video as well. What are some of the things, if anyone's listening to this thinking around, you know, we're thinking of using more video or changing the way we use video, what's some of the watch outs from your perspective? And also, you know, it's clearly has its strengths, which might be worth reiterating, but also what do we need to be maybe mindful of when it comes to video, of some of the challenges that the use of video sometimes has? Obviously, you know, like you've said, using a professional organization like your own is one thing, but sometimes when we're doing this sort of crowdsourced video, when people are making their own clips or attempting this with maybe without that kind of the wisdom that you've developed over those years? What are some of the things that we need to be thinking of if we're going to be using more video or trying to adopt video as a channel?
Yeah. Well, obviously, the more people involved in planning it, the worse it's probably going to be, right?
Right. Like, yeah,
Anytime the lawyers get involved before you've done anything, that's probably a bad idea.
Yeah.
So, typically, if you need to run something by them, it should be after you're done, not beforehand, because they're going to ruin everything and make it stiff and unwatchable. So
That and corporate branding people as well, who have a kind of obsession about how they use the logo and the colors as well. We always find
goodness.
I get it kind of ruining what was initially quite a good project. But anyway, if anyone's listening from corporate comms and branding, apologies for that. But yeah.
Yeah, apologies for that. Just please stop doing that.
Yeah.
Please. No, but aside from that, I think one note that I would give people is there should be one person with the power to upload.
Yeah.
So the more people that have the power to just send out there, you kind of can't take some of that stuff back. Yeah. You can delete it, but once the link goes out, the link's kind of out there.
Yeah.
And so, you just want to make sure that there's somebody that has a good head on their shoulders, that understands the culture, that understands the climate, that really knows, okay, yes, I'm comfortable, because what we can assume is that only people within our company are going to see it.
Mm.
Right. The mistake people make often is they say, well, we're going to put this on our intranet. Nobody else in the world ever even has a chance to see this. Well, of course they do. Somebody can screenshot that with their cell phone just as easily as they can pass a link along.
Yeah.
So nothing is safe. So if there's anything that is so proprietary that it could bring down the company or get you in a whole lot of trouble, just don't put it on video.
Mm.
Right? Because there's always that chance. But the other side of that, Craig, is like, don't live in fear. People out in the world are so busy that they're not waking up every day trying to figure out how that they can sabotage your company with your
family. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
That's paranoia.
Yeah. In terms of the you mentioned earlier about, kind of your own lessons and that kind of overly scripted and kind of stilted and wooden. What are some of the things there that the organizations to be mindful of? Because I guess there, it is striking that balance between, kind of controlling the narrative, but also that kind of spontaneity. How do you find that sweet spot between the two? Because if it's just completely free form and, the analogy is we're just having a conversation, but we kind of had a pre-call and I wrote down a few kind of questions and that's kind of a path that we're kind of walking along here, but we're not frightened of stepping off it if we need to. How do you do that in a kind of corporate video setting? Is it a lot working along those lines and just having a kind of structure, or is it kind of being, how do you get that balance right?
You bring up a really wonderful point, and it's that unscripted does not mean unprepared.
Yeah.
So just like you and I had that conversation, and while we're leaving room for spontaneity, we certainly have an idea of what we're going to talk about today.
Yeah. Yeah.
My goal, anytime I work with an organization, is to start with the goal. What's the goal of creating content? Because if you're just creating content for the sake of creating content, then you should just stop creating content, right?
Mm.
The goal is, there should be a goal with everything that you do. Every time you press record, you should be saying, okay, our ideal outcome for this is X. And so I start with that with our clients and say, what do we want to create? Perfect world. We make a great video or set of videos. What's the outcome we want to create?
Yeah.
Okay. How are we going to get there? And a lot of it for me is an education. I need to learn as much as possible. And it should be on the part of whoever's conducting your video. If you're bringing in an outside resource, they should, if they're not putting their legwork in to really learn and ask questions, because on the day that I shoot with our clients, I am never, ever, ever holding a list of questions in my hand. I don't want anybody to think of it as an interview. I want them to think of it as a conversation. When's the last time you had a conversation with a friend or, someone out at a restaurant or wherever, where you were holding a list of questions? It's very unnatural. And so you can't get people to fully relax and be themselves if you constantly look down at a piece of paper. That should all be in my head or whoever the video producer's head by the time you get to production day.
Yeah.
And so I think it's really identifying the right partner, and it takes a little bit of trust. You know, I mean, we've certainly worked with our fair share of organizations that have brought us in, for example, for things like safety. We work a lot with HR teams to help them, you know, explain their benefits a little bit better, because a lot of times that's kind of a black box for people. And so to understand health and all those things. And at first it takes a little bit of faith because, you know, truthfully, there's not a whole lot of people that work this way that have come to this realization, sadly, that unscripted is best.
Mm.
And so they're so used to having productions where people say, okay, I'm going to hit record and you read this.
Yeah.
And they look like hostage videos, right? So, so you have to earn that. You have to be willing to pick a partner and then trust them to do their job.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, here to that.
Yes.
In terms of, are there any situations? This isn't one of the questions I have on my list. It's a sort of an extension, I guess. What I was
no worries.
Ask you more about the limitations. Are there any situations where you would say no? I'm going to walk away from this, or I'm not going to take on this assignment because there's just too many kind of, you know, red flags, and you can kind of see the blood pressure rising because of the stress this is going to cause. And I'm saying, because, you know, there are situations where I've been in that situation where clearly the client just doesn't get what we've already intimated around the fact that they just want to, you know, they want a kind of scripted kind of really horrible kind of hostage video, as you put it. Any other red flags for you, which kind of are kind of, you know, clearly this isn't going to work, or there's not a meeting of minds here. What any thoughts around that, Pat?
Yeah, sure. So one thing for me that is really important is that I get to sit in the seat across from whoever I'm speaking to.
Yeah.
And so sometimes I'll run into a client that says, well, we want our people to conduct these conversations. Number one, there's a lot of nonverbal things that I've had to learn over the years to be able to pull from the people in the chair across from me what we need to make a successful video.
Mm.
And so if they're not smiling, I'm going to smile at them to the point that they think I'm crazy, because smiling is contagious. If we're talking about something that's a bit more serious or emotional, I will drop the tone of my voice. I'll slow my cadence a bit, because that's what I want back from them. And so as an interviewer, as somebody conducting the conversation, I am only going to get back what I give.
Mm.
And I've only come to that realization and only honed those skills over time, right? Mm. And by doing it the wrong way. And so to expect someone in a company to be able to do all those things as successfully is as silly as expecting me to be able to step into their organization and do their job as successfully on day one.
Yeah.
And so if someone doesn't want me to do that part of my job, then I'm not terribly interested in helping. Now, is all of our work unscripted? No. There's certain situations where, you know, a voiceover makes a lot of sense.
Hmm.
So maybe we're doing videos to explain, you know, benefits or, you know, certain things in safety. Those things probably need, you know, to be scripted and some structure. A lot of times for safety videos, we would kind of structure a voiceover script, but then we would interview people to kind of bring it to life. Mm. So if you think about a sports broadcast, a lot of time they have the play-by-play person, and then they have the color commentary.
Yeah.
Play-by-play can be that scripted voiceover. The commentary comes from those unscripted conversations. So there is a hybrid of those. But to answer your question, if people want to sit in the seat, I'm not terribly interested. And honestly, if you can tell that they just don't embrace the concept of being genuine and authentic, then we are just not going to be a good fit for them.
Yeah. That's fair enough. I totally understand that. I guess just sort of bringing things towards a wrap, I guess, you know, we mentioned earlier about the kind of the way that technology has changed, and you know, over your time in the industry, and you know, my as a non-video professional is sort of the way I've seen it evolve. And you know, I think when we had our original conversation, I used the analogy of my early stages of my career, where if we were going to, you know, we had a video, it would be a case of like wheeling in the TV with the VHS underneath it, and kind of putting, you know, the old putting the video in, playing it, and everyone would be sat there. And that was really the only way you could use videos in a kind of a corporate context. But now we've obviously, you know, we've got these incredible pocket computers that show video to a quality that, you know, again, 10 years ago would have been even unimaginable on a big TV. How is the way that people consume video now? Because I remember, you know, going back to those days where we used to wheel that big kind of cathode ray tube in on wheels into the room and sit everyone down. There was a kind of social element to that. You know, there would be people would be, you know, not talking through the video, but they would laugh and make comments, and you know, you'd kind of get a sense of the atmosphere and the way it was being absorbed. Whereas nowadays, obviously, asynchronously, people are kind of watching things when they get a chance, maybe while they're commuting or, you know, kind of on their desktop or wherever. What are your thoughts on the way that that's consumed now, and how that's changed the I guess the conversation that happens outside of the video itself, and how that's kind of socialized within the organization?
Yeah, and I think, you know, work from home has certainly pushed that even further, right? Where a lot of times you're not getting groups together, but for folks that are in the office at Stericycle, the really good managers that we had, when they would, if they did, for example, like a daily or weekly huddle, they would show the videos to their teams then, and they would build a discussion around whatever it might be. So I do think that really good leaders can find a way to still make that communal. From a technology standpoint, I do think that it has to go out via link, because it's just so easy to be able to click it, and people can watch it on their devices very easily as well, which is the way it should be. I mean, this needs to be easy for everyone. And so that way, you know that the people that are out on their own at their homes, or the people that are in a truck, for example, or in a warehouse, they're going to get the message and you can track their views. But yeah, managers, you know, they need to be able to get that. I know that when you and I spoke last time, I told you a quick story that I want to share really quickly.
And please, it's
and this is why it needs to be accessible immediately. And so when I was at Stericycle, one of the toughest days for that company, they had to do a pretty massive round of layoffs for the first time in the history of the company. It's the first time they ever really fell on hard times after startup phase. And because there were people spread out all over the globe, the CEO, Charlie Aluto, could not get in front of everyone. And so what's the easy button? The easy button is to fire off an email. But we had been working together for several years at that point, and he really appreciated and embraced video. And he said, "Hey, can you fly out to Chicago? It's a 2-hour flight for me." He said, "I really feel like people need to see my face." So I jumped on a plane, and this guy had just been through hell. You know, I mean, this was weighing on him so heavily that he had to do this to, you know, I don't know, 1,000 families, maybe.
Yeah.
You know, it was a lot of people. And so no scripts. I just pressed record. He stared into the lens and he just said, "Hey, you know, today is, you know, the most difficult day that I remember here at Stericycle. And, you know, I have some news that's not great, but I want it to be able to deliver it to you as close to face to face as we can get here, being so spread apart." And he just, you know, for a minute talked about what was happening in the company. And he said, "Listen, you're going to get an email with all the details." So he didn't get into too much detail. He said, "I just want to say from the bottom of my heart to the people that are impacted that, you know, I'm so, so sorry that this is happening. And I want to thank you for your dedication." And man, it was like a sad moment, but it was one of the proudest moments for me that this guy believes so much in the medium and believes so much that as a leader, you need to put yourself out there and not hide behind a keyboard, that I really think that people grew a new level of respect for him that day. And so I'd encourage anyone that has either big news that's great or not so great to share, man, don't do it via email. Email can be the follow-up with detail. If you can't get face-to-face with people, put yourself on video.
Yeah.
Send out a link so people can consume that immediately.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, this was something we had in our script, or not our script, and our plan, but just our a question, I guess you just, it just sprung to mind there where you're talking about, what about live? Because I guess, again, with the advent of, you know, Teams and obviously there's the kind of ad hoc day-to-day business as usual, but certainly, you know, there's now more of a prevalence of people kind of presenting or the kind of, you know, kind of the kind of state of the nation type sort of addresses that people do. Is there anything different? Because I guess live, you know, you haven't got the obviously the benefit of editing and going back to it then. Would you approach a live stream or a live video in any way differently to how you would a kind of recorded or, you know, an edited video?
I think live's wonderful, you know, and live wasn't even, it's so crazy how much the world has changed even in 6 years. Like COVID changed so much, but
absolutely.
Even 6 years ago, I mean, yeah, we were using video conferencing, but not nearly as prevalently as we're using it now. So that wasn't anything that the Stericycle leadership team did a lot, but you know, they were a public company. So they had their calls with the street that were always live, right? Their quarterly earnings reports. So, you know, that was, you know, as critical as you can get as far as live communication, that immediately impacted the stock. And so for leaders, I don't know how many folks that are listening are part of, you know, publicly traded companies or people, you know, that have to report news live that's that important. But man, getting in front of your team shouldn't be nearly as stressful as that. Mm. And so I do love the live aspect. And I think that it's critically important for leaders to constantly update people on here's where we're at, here's where we're going. Mm. And I think doing it live, if time zones are friendly enough to allow that, right?
Yeah.
Too spread out.
Yeah.
That's great. Stericycle, we really didn't have that luxury to get everybody live because we were so spread out. But for organizations that are able to do that, and if you can't get face to face with people, man, live is a wonderful tool and people are equipped with this technology and it's familiar. And so, you know, you can deliver your message that's prepared but not scripted and then leave time for people to weigh in and ask questions. And then all of a sudden you really kind of enhance the internal communications of your organization.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And I guess as people are like, you know, people tend to be a bit more forgiving if it's live and clearly not edited. You know, people, if you do slip up or you kind of, you know, want to pause to think a little bit, you know, people kind of understand that as well. So it's not that it has to be as polished as a finished edited version. It you know, people have a kind of natural propensity to accommodate that, don't they?
Do you remember when COVID started and everybody was scared to death that they were going to lose all their money in the bank and everything?
Yeah.
I you know, my family, we keep our money at Vanguard, which is, you know, a big financial organization. And I say all of our money, like, you know, there's not that much there, but you know, what we have saved for the kids and, you know, our future is there.
I know what you mean.
And so, so the CEO comes on and does a video. And now this is when, this is the height of hysteria when people are pulling their money out of the stock.
Yeah.
All people needed was for someone to calm them down and tell them that there was nothing to worry about and that this has happened before. That there were times where people freaked out and that markets always rebound. That's all they needed. We didn't need to get into detail. Well, the CEO comes on and clearly reads off a script staring into the lens of a camera. And I saw right through it. I'm like, this is not what I need right now. I don't need his team of people to script something out and have this guy read it, right? Like, I just needed someone to calm my fears.
Yeah.
And that was the first of what were three straight scripted videos that they put out trying to get people through the storm.
Yeah.
Man, it's just not the way to go. Again, I sound like a broken record. People want authenticity. That's what they ultimately want. And as leaders, that is our job, is to be authentic and not perfect. When you stumble, that just lets people know that you're probably not reading. And that you're just kind of talking and being yourself. And so I do think that some of those stumbles actually help your messaging.
Yeah, I agree. It kind of makes it natural. And again, it goes back to how we're kind of recording this podcast, which is, you know, kind of, I do very minimal editing because often at least I don't need to. And secondly, because I think it makes the conversation sound clipped and a bit weird if you over edit things. So
agree. Yeah, good
yeah,
for you.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. Just sort of finally, I mean, you may have already kind of given us all of the tips that you want to give. Any final tips that we've not already covered for anyone who's, you know, looking to evolve the way they're using video in their internal comms? Any kind of golden nuggets of wisdom on your many years in the industry, Pat?
You know, I think what often happens is that organizations say, okay, we need to start using video. And then the leaders will then task people with being on camera and delivering messages. But they will never do it themselves because they don't like the way they look and they don't like the way they sound.
Yeah.
But those same people will go into a meeting that day with 10, 20, 30, 100 people and stand in front of a room and deliver a message and never think about how they look or how they sound.
Yeah.
That makes no sense. That is the same face and the same voice that you would be putting on video. And here's the truth of the matter. The content that you're creating is not for you. So just don't ever watch it, right? Like if you're creating content for yourself, then you're a sociopath. Remember that there's a reason why you're creating this. You're creating it for a group of people to create an outcome.
Yeah.
So put yourself out there, be genuine. And if you don't like the way you look or sound, just don't watch it. Because that's not why you created it in the first place.
Yeah. That's a great tip, Pat. I like that. That's fantastic. Pat, I'm going to ask you just before we close out, just to sort of say, look, if anyone would like to get in touch with you, I was going to put a link into your LinkedIn profile. So if people want to reach out to you and connect and ask you any questions that I've not asked you about video, but also I was going to put a link into your website, www.skybluecreative.com. Any other resources or links that you'd like me to put into the show notes, Pat?
Those are the two. So I love LinkedIn. I love to interact with people on LinkedIn. I'm not a social media guy per se, but I don't really look at LinkedIn as social media. So that's where I spend my time online is LinkedIn. And then, through the website, it's skybluecreative.com. And, you know, I am overly accessible, I'm told. And so for anybody out there that's, even if you're just thinking about getting started and you need some tips, I really love your show. I love what you do, Craig. And I'd be happy to help anybody with tips on how to get started. And really that's the whole key is just get started. You don't have to be perfect. People aren't expecting perfection, but you just, the more you do this, the better you're going to get as an organization.
Absolutely. Yeah. It's the, what is it? The best is the enemy of the good with many things in life. And particularly, I think it's, you know, I know when from my experience, I kind of twiddled my fingers around starting a podcast for years, and then COVID struck and I had no other excuses left. So, and it was just a case of just getting on with it. So yeah, I think that's a good lesson in life, but no, look, that's really, really helpful, Pat, and really great to kind of cover off a topic, surprisingly in nearly, well, over 4 years now, we've never really talked about video. We've talked about audio. We've talked about lots of other channels, but video is one that's not because it's not a popular channel, just because I've never found a guest who could talk about it as eloquently as you have. So I really appreciate that, Pat.
Well, thank you so much. No, this was a lot of fun, and again, happy to be a resource to you and all the folks out there that are doing really great work. The internal work is incredibly important to keep people engaged, to keep them informed. You know, that is incredibly important work, and you create opportunities for people out there. And so I just think that this can be one of the tools in your arsenal that if used correctly can absolutely move the needle.
Wonderful. Wonderful. Excellent. Well, on that note, Pat, we will sign off. Thank you so much. And, but maybe we'll be talking again in the future. When anything changes in the world of video, we'll come back to you, Pat, and you can give us your take on it.
Would love that. Thank you so much.
Take care. Thanks, Pat. Bye-bye. We hope you've enjoyed this episode of the Engaging Internal Comms podcast. If you've got any ideas for episodes you'd like us to cover in future, you can email us at info@thebigpicturepeople.co.uk, or you can use the feedback form at engagingic.com. If you're not already subscribed to the show via your podcast platform, please do so. And if you could leave a review for us, that would be absolutely fantastic. We have links to other episodes at engagingic.com. All of our previous episodes are available there. And if you're interested in our visual communication services, our big pictures, our learning maps, our explainer videos, and also our live graphic recording, please get in touch with us again at info@thebigpicturepeople.co.uk. Thank you.